Okay, so on Twitter, like a few weeks ago, I teased like a very special episode of Bad Football Movies, and the day has finally come. We have Jenny Vrentis, SI senior writer in studio. I'm Connor Orr for Bad Football Movies. This is exciting. I'm very excited.
It's notable for my lack of movie knowledge.
For those of you who have listened to the first few episodes, we have referenced Jenny's movie knowledge over and over again as the staff film buff. Kind of a joke. Many pop culture references, incidentally, kind of, you know, are missed a little bit.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a tennis ball in high weeds. You know, I just get lost a little bit when it comes to movies, Connor. Really, you know, at the root of all of this is that I don't love sitting for a movie.
Yes.
I think the reason I have seen so few movies is because I worry that I will be trapped for 2 hours. And so
it's
I
a time commitment.
And I might end up watching several hours of TV, but if it's in like hour-long bursts, I feel like I can leave at any time. I mean, you could leave at any time anyway. But this is at the root of my lack of movie knowledge.
But the twist here that we've promised all of our viewers is that this is the first time that I have not seen a movie that we're watching. And this is a movie that's very familiar in Jenny's canon.
I have seen it, yes. This is like a proud moment for me that I'm able to contribute to a pop culture conversation. We are seeing Varsity Blues, which came out in 1999, 20 years ago, which makes me feel incredibly old because I watched it when it came out with my sister.
Did you see it in theaters?
No. Well, you know, we might have. Gosh, I don't even remember. I just remember watching it, and we were big Dawson's Creek fans, and obviously James Vanderbeek, who Scott Brody, podcast czar at SI, started calling the Beak, which I'm just going to adopt for the purposes of this pod.
No doubt.
The Beak.
And this is Peak Beak, right? This is Peak Beak.
This is Peak Beak. This movie is, you know, again, we're going to have another debate over the bad football movie title of this podcast, because I really love Varsity Blues, but I'm sure that some would say it's a bad movie, a bad football movie. It only has like 6.5 stars on IMDb, which doesn't sound great. But we're going to introduce Connor to the wonderful world of Varsity Blues. Texas football is at the center of this, as it is many movies, I'm sure. We're veering a little bit from the pro football centric. Have all the other podcasts been pro football centric?
Relatively. I would say that the longest yard already kind of deviated from
right.
that a little bit.
Right. Okay, yeah. That's yeah. true. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, we're really touching on a lot of themes here, you know. Injuries, pressure to return from injuries, hopes and dreams beyond a small town, you know, pressures of a coach, of a parent. And, you know, there's a love interest. There's a very famous scene involving that, but I don't really want to say more.
Oh, boy. We're good to watch this in a glass enclosed office.
Well,
per
you
usual.
Know, we might have to fast forward through a few parts, but I don't, you know.
We're guided through this Jenny style, by the way. Normally we thank our beer sponsors, but today we've got Wolfer Cider. This is the first non-beer podcast too, so this is very exciting. We're expanding our horizons in many different ways. I'm very excited.
I'm glad that we could you know, diversify a little bit here, Connor. And the Wolfer Ciders come highly recommended. I'm a big fan of the Wolfer Estate Rosé Table Wine, and here we've got some dry white cider this afternoon.
This is going to be just great.
It's going to be a great afternoon.
This is great. Yeah.
I'm not even fearing sitting through the 1 hour 44 minutes and 38 seconds of this movie. I don't feel trapped at all, Connor.
I'm glad I don't make you feel trapped. All right, so we're getting into Peak Beak here. Varsity Blues, we're going to check in a couple minutes here and let you know what we think. So a lot of takeaways after the first 25 minutes of this. The first of which is that there's no way a 13-year-old Jenny Vrentis was allowed to see this in theaters. There's no way.
We've definitely confirmed that. Yeah. This is a lot raunchier than I remember. Again, it's been almost 20 years because I'm guessing I didn't see it as a freshman. I probably saw it a few years later on TV, like late night with my sister.
Some sort of embargoed thing where the parents didn't know exactly.
Yeah, they probably had like gone to bed or something. And like, this was like, oh, let's watch Varsity Blues. Like, I can't imagine my parents signing off on this.
I famously once on a date, we went to go see Mission Impossible, and it was PG-13. And I was 12, and
you were on a date at age 12?
Yeah, freshman year of high school. Yeah.
Wow.
And so they flagged me for not being 13. The person that I was with was 13, and so we had to see The Princess Diaries instead. We actually saw The Princess Diaries.
A 12-year-old Connor Orr already, you know.
So a movie like this is not even my
stratosphere.
Yeah.
This is fantastic.
I have a lot of thoughts.
Okay. So should we establish where we are in the movie?
Yeah, we should establish where we are.
So we've met Mox, who's the main character. Yes. He is the backup quarterback to Lance Harbor, who is the star in the small town. Paul Walker, rest in peace.
Yes.
The star of the West Canaan football team. Moxon is dating Lance Harbor's sister. And the starting quarterback is dating Darcy, the cheerleader, lead cheerleader.
Yes. Yeah. She wants a future with him, it seems.
Yeah.
It seems like he's going to Florida State, but there's some pain issues we're concealing here. Maybe if scouts dug a little deeper, they would realize that there's some drug and knee issues there.
I mean, things escalated quickly, Connor. Yeah, I mean,
it's like 10 minutes in and we're like, the guy's getting shots in his knee. They're glossing over concussion protocol. This is very risque.
Right. Billy Bob got knocked out on the field. They used smelling salts to revive him. Lance Harbor required a cortisone shot in his knee to play in the game and then popped painkillers afterwards. So we really, some weighty topics for the movie so far, Connor.
They would not have resonated, I don't know, with an 11-year-old Connor. I think I would have let that go.
I know, it's interesting. I'm picking up a lot more as a 34-year-old Jenny, I will say.
So some interesting things to me. The coach, Bud Kilmer, to me looks like a junior senator who they find like racist Facebook posts of. Like, that's his look and feel. He's got a very that kind of feel to him, you know?
All right. He's got that aesthetic.
They're running an offense that seems at times both to be like a strictly option offense, but then all of a sudden like a run and shoot. So it's like, there doesn't seem to be a clear thread offensively.
I agree. They don't have an offensive identity, Connor, which may be a bigger issue. Even though they've won so many district championships, this may be, as you pointed out, why they're not aiming for state. If they had a more consistent offensive identity, perhaps they would be, you know, a little able to aim a little higher.
He's been bragging about the district titles, but I feel like for a man that, you know, entrenched in his own legacy, the state titles would mean more to him than the district championship.
Yeah, like, have you ever heard of a high school caring about a district title? No!
You don't get that on a sweatshirt at the banquet. I'm just saying.
Maybe I mean, it's like I guess it'd be the same thing being like, yeah, we were like, you know, AFC South champs. Right? I mean, I guess it means something.
The Colts, you hang a banner. But so,
yeah. Okay.
Billy Bob, I'm very concerned where this is going. I mean, unhealthy habits across the board.
Right.
Eating, drinking, just really the whole thing. And he doesn't seem to be drinking a lot of water. This whole thing just doesn't look good to me.
Chugging syrup straight out of the... but, you know, he's a little bit of a Richie Incognito character, I have to say. I mean, definitely, you know, 17-year-old, 14-year-old Jenny watching this, you know, didn't pick up on the truck, 69 truck that he's been driving around town. So a lot of hidden references for an adult audience here.
It seems to me like the parents are, I think they're trying to show us that the parents are just as bad as the kids, which allows the kids to just, I guess, act in this cycle of like, you know, destructive behavior a little bit, right?
Right. They're all stuck in West Canaan. One generation does the same thing the previous generation did. You know, Moxon's father played for Kilmer as well, and creating this, you know, persistent culture where football is at the center of it. And he's really raging against that, reading Slaughterhouse 5.
I love that.
Hidden in the playbook.
That's a great book.
Would you do that, Connor? Would you ever hide a book in a playbook?
I think if any coach ever saw me with a playbook, that would be a dead giveaway that I'm doing something I'm not supposed to do. You know?
So you didn't study the playbook very much.
Yeah, I didn't really know any of the playbooks.
As an offensive lineman for...
the Abington Heights
Comets.
Middling offensive lineman at best.
Okay.
Very, very limited skill set. You know? So this wasn't, you know, this is one of those things that I think like a lot of my friends who are actually good at sports, when they saw these movies, it might have resonated with them a little bit better. The aspects of the pressure and the bright lights, which just for me never really sunk in because I never had to feel that in any real way. Like anytime I was in the game, we were ahead by or behind by 30 points. So
okay, so you and Moxon have something in common then. Yeah. Rarely seeing the field.
Not seeing the field, and we both read Slaughterhouse 5.
All right, so there you go. Good starting point.
It is. I will say that this last thing that we saw here before, we got a nice little picture of the map of the male anatomy, which we paused the movie on. Like this showdown between the two dads, the dads of the two quarterbacks, and then Moxon makes the bold choice of instead of knocking the beer can off of the dad's head, throws it at his face. Is he skilled enough to have knocked the can over, but the choice was to hit him in the face? Or do you feel like he's not that good and he's still rounding out a raw skill set. Like, is he a Josh Allen type, or is he, you know, is he Andrew Luck? Is he so good that he could put it wherever he wants?
I think he put it right on the nose on purpose.
Nice. So this is my kind of guy right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm all in on Beak. You know,
the Beak, yeah.
I'm all in on Beak. Now, Paul Walker's character, Paul Walker, right?
Yeah.
He has not done anything to make me think he's unlikable so far. He kind of plays along with the role a little bit, but I think he's okay so far.
Yeah, it seems like they have a good friendship, you know?
He's dating his sister. Everything seems cool.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
What could go wrong?
We'll have to find out when we press play.
We'll find out. So that moment we were all kind of waiting for happened, right? The good-looking starting quarterback has gone down with a ligament injury. The coach's, like, disregard for everybody's injuries continues to be exposed, but nobody seems to be batting an eye at this.
No one's checking old Kilmer. He's just running roughshod over these young boys' lives and bodies.
Yeah, it's really terrible.
Yeah, yeah. It's they said he tore every ligament he's got, Lance Harbor did, and out a minimum of a year and a half, if ever. And they were shocked with all the scar tissue in his knee that he was still playing. Old Kilmer says, I never said anything to me, which we all know is a lie because we saw him getting that cortisone shot in his knee.
James Van Der Beek is so ahead of his time in this role, not only for the concern for concussion health. I mean, he's waving the flags for ligament health. Like, he's noticing overuse of prescription drugs, painkillers. Like, he is like a white knight ahead of his time.
You're right. Moxon is the beacon that the sport needed in 1999.
The beak
that the sport needed. Wow. There's just a lot of... But it's true. I mean, it's really calling attention to a lot of pervasive issues in the game. I mean, I'm really impressed with screenplay here.
So far, it seems like he has his own version of an offense that he'd like to run that is like a version. It's like a separate thing that he's been developing in his playbook or something like that, I guess.
Yeah, when he's not reading Slaughterhouse-Five, he does have some real thoughts about formations he'd like to use.
Again, ahead of his time. He's talking about fast moving. You know, this is early Chip Kelly, maybe, era. You know, analytics-based offenses, you know? What doesn't he know?
If he'd been hired in the NFL in 1999, where would we be now, Connor?
Well, if he was even a quarterback's coach in the NFL this year, he would be a head coach. Last year, he'd be a head coach this year.
Right? Absolutely.
He would have been cut right to the front of the line.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, but no, good for him for stepping in when Billy Bob was clearly not fit to play. He told him to say something to the coach. We're seeing some real leadership traits here, Connor, that could be foreshadowing down the line.
Mm. Do you think that, I mean, does this movie bring back like any, like, do you remember watching it now? Like, this is probably the first time you've seen it since.
This is the first time I've seen it. But yes, I do remember watching. All the characters are very familiar.
Everything's coming back.
Yeah, not everything, but most things.
I would say so far, this is an okay football movie. This isn't a bad football movie.
Yeah, because it's really impressive, you know, that they're willing to dive into some serious topics.
I want to see a little bit more of this offense, though. This what the Coyotes have cooking here.
Let's press play.
Let's dig in here. So apparently we're nearing like a pinnacle moment of this movie, right?
Yes, a big scene is forthcoming here. So we thought we should just regroup, preview a little bit. The big takeaway since we last spoke is that things change.
For Darcy, very quickly, apparently.
For Darcy, for Mox, for the West Canaan High School, things change. So
this poor child tears every ligament in his knee, and then 35 minutes later, his girlfriend is in the car with James Van Der Beek changing, which to me seems like a ploy, right?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you don't have to change there. You can change anywhere. You know?
She said she was covered like she would be in a bathing suit. So it's really up to
but yeah, things change,
discretion.
Mox.
Things change, Mox.
And now she's invited him over to his house. He's clearly, like you said, a man in conflict, debating whether or not to go here. Clearly, he knows what's about to happen. Am I missing anything here? What's like?
You're really following the plot very well, Connor. they've really set it up pretty easily so that we know what's about to happen here. But yeah, we face a man with a big decision ahead of him.
I feel like high school is made more complicated by movies like this. Maybe like on second thought, like if you saw something like this going into high school, I feel like any time that you'd be invited over to someone's house, you'd feel that pressure, that conflict or whatever. Like he's very like upset about everything that's or like aware of everything that's going on.
Right.
He's
yeah.
A thoughtful person.
This stuff doesn't really happen. As you mentioned, you were probably ever. Saw what, two parties like the kind that have been going on so far. Went to zero such parties in high school, so maybe we're just a poor sample size here. But
a lot of questions: where the kids or where the parents, like outside of attending the games, they don't seem to have a very large role in these kids' lives. They're always gone, just allowing for any sort of promiscuity or drinking to happen.
Correct, which is exactly what's setting up the current event we're about to watch.
I've heard, like, everyone always talks about the whipped cream scene in this movie. Is that what this is?
I think so, Connor. Good job.
All right, here we go. Oh, my God. This is ridiculous. I pressed record if only to capture some of, like, the... This is totally ridiculous. Nothing. Things just don't happen this way. I agree, James Vanderbeek. Things aren't happening this way.
You're sorry? There's Lance, and then there's Jules, and I don't know if I love Jules, but I might.
Oh, my God.
I don't know, because I don't love you, but Lance, he might love you.
I don't love Lance.
She just doesn't love Lance. Oh, wow. So the...
I'm gonna have another life. Now I know it's probably going to stay in Miss Kane and be the manager of Walmart, Coach JV football.
What's wrong? Okay. I'm going to pause this. Okay. So I asked for depth to Darcy's character. Clearly, you know, we're not really getting it, right? Darcy seems to be sort of, you know, a one-track mind here. You know, she has one thing on her mind here, which is just capturing the quarterback and escaping... West Canaan. This whole scene was totally ridiculous. And just to like, I'm thinking in James Vanderbeek's mind, like, it's like, okay, she invited me over. Now she wants to make ice cream all of a sudden. Ice cream sundae.
Yeah.
In my mind, I'm thinking, like, I don't hear a freezer. Like, what kind of ice cream? I don't know if I want whipped cream on any kind of ice cream. I think it would depend on that. Like, there's a lot of questions.
So you're anti this scene because you just don't like whipped cream? This is the most interesting take I've ever seen.
I know. I'm putting myself in his shoes as a very, like, contemplative person who lets their mind get in the way of just maybe having a straightforward good time, which is maybe what other people would have done in this situation.
I think most other people would have had a hard time turning down Darcy. She seems to be a quite popular girl at West Canaan High School.
Just too aggressive, like very aggressive, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's really jarring to see the photos of Lance around the house, you know?
They're still there, and she doesn't love Lance. And here's the other thing. She says she's previewing her life ahead with Lance, and he's going to manage a Walmart and coach JV football. That's fine.
What's
wrong with that?
Yeah, yeah,
that's
really.
It's a good life.
She's really making a lot of judgments here that are just really offensive to many people.
My God. It's almost like for those of you who listen to the Any Given Sunday edition, there's that character, Dennis Quaid's character, who's like, his wife is very angry when he wants to retire. He's like 38, 39 with concussion issues, and she's like slapping him and saying, you can't quit. Maybe this is her backstory. This Darcy turns into Dennis Quaid's wife in Any Given Sunday, maybe.
I mean, Darcy's motivations, like, she's expressing them in a very shallow way, but they're probably a little bit deeper. She wants to get out of this town. She feels stuck. She wants a life beyond. But really what we should be seeing here, Connor, is a woman charting her own path
yes.
out of West Canaan and not relying on a man to do it.
You could do it, Darcy. You don't need. And here's the other thing. If that's the way you've decided you're going to go ahead and do things, which is to just be with the starting quarterback, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of scouting going on here. You know, you could go to another school and you could look at other quarterbacks.
Wow.
You know, like only one quarterback is theoretically going to make it out of one or two, you know.
So you're saying she should find the most talented one.
If that's what you're, this clearly, she seems to be dead set on this plan.
Right. You know? Yeah.
There does not seem to be a whole lot of backup plans going
well,
on.
Well,
right
maybe
now.
Someone she'll meet will steer her in a different direction, Connor.
Let's hope, because she seems.
There's a lot of time left in this movie.
She seems very lost right now. I'm a little, more than Billy Bob or anybody I see, I'm developing more of a concern for Darcy.
So she's your least favorite character right now.
Yes, but I'm also the most concerned for her.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good combo.
She seems the most lost out of everybody here. Everybody here is very pondering. Like we just watched James Vanderbeek for 15 minutes wander around West Canaan with a six pack.
Some Lee's dungarees.
Very, very baggy jeans. Very baggy jeans.
Like coming to terms with his new stardom.
Yes.
And what that means for his life, his relationships, his standing in the town.
Wow.
It's really, really, he was considering a lot of thoughts on that walk.
That is a lot. I mean, it's a lot for a kid to digest, you know?
Yeah, especially a thoughtful kid like like Mox.
How did we not grasp the fashion of the times? But you know, I think like every generation thinks that. But looking back on that, like I remember like all of my jeans, you could have fit so many things in there. You know what I mean? Just, and you know, it's just, it's a lot.
Yeah, like what do you call on the side? The little carpenter
yeah.
buckle, you know, like, to not, hold a hammer.
I don't, yeah, I yeah, never
you,
had a hammer.
You didn't have a hammer, but all your jeans probably had a hammer hook.
You know, I don't know. I think that's just contributing maybe to a little bit of his, you know, stylistically, love life. There's a lot going on for him right now, you know.
A lot of competing forces, and he's turning Miss Darcy down, and the look on her face right now in the freeze frame is one of shock.
Maybe this is the turning point.
Could be.
Hopefully. All right. I'm not done with you yet, Darcy, but let's turn this thing around, you know. We can be better. So all the troubling things to happen in this movie, like this seems to be by far the worst thing.
This is maybe the most extreme case of a coach demanding that his offense be run. I mean, we've seen lots of things. We've seen firings. We've seen, you know, sideline tantrums. We haven't really, I mean, heard of a coach threatening to get a star player's scholarship revoked.
Yeah, so for those of you who haven't seen the movie in a while, we're at the point now, we're about an hour and 15 minutes in, where the things have been going well with the beak at quarterback, except they went to a strip club, they drank too much, and then they lost to a team that they shouldn't have, setting up this all-pivotal final game of the season. And then somewhere along the line, James Vanderbeek got into Brown with a full scholarship, which is great for him.
Very Congratulations. Excited.
Congratulations to him. And now the coach is so upset that he won't run his ball control offense, that he's threatening to alter his transcripts to just nuke his scholarship to Brown, which is horrible.
This is remarkable. We're also not sure that this is the best offense you're running. First of all,
we have many questions.
We have
about
many questions. The questions about the offense have been persistent through this movie. Again, it doesn't look like they're always running a ball control offense. We have also heard allegations from the star running back, who is black, that he is not getting the ball inside the 20.
They're running the ball inside the 20. So how are you a ball control offense?
Right. So he's saying he's not getting the ball inside the 20. You know, there's lots of again, we're seeing these very weighty threads in this movie, right? Racism. We're seeing, you know, this situation is extremely dark, trying to get a scholarship revoked. Billy Bob had a rough go at the field where
yes.
he was suicidal. I mean, honestly, we're laughing at some of these scenes, but then it's like you laugh at a scene and then the next one, you're just like, oh my gosh, this is like, this took a turn.
they sprinkle in comic relief at very strange times in this movie where it's like, oh, haha, there's like a pig and like the little brother keeps starting cults and stuff like that. He's very funny. And then the next scene, Billy Bob is in the back of his truck with a gun and you're like, oh my God, no.
Right, right. Really, it's a lot to process in this movie.
It's a lot to process.
It's more than I remembered, I have to be honest with you, Connor.
The one thing that we both agree on to this point, though, is the Beak is a champion of everything, like health, feminism, like just like the whole movement across the board. This guy
education.
He checks every box.
He's really a rare figure in American cinema.
he's helping Darcy get out of West Canaan on her own merits. You know, he is clearly smart. I mean, he's breaking down the football military industrial complex. I mean, how much can one man handle?
Yeah. The only thing that I would say is failing is the relationship with Jules, and the treatment of women in this movie continues to be concerning. There was the panty droppers line by the Wes Welker-esque receiver tweeter. I got to give Albert Breer credit for that. He walked in a few minutes ago and said his tweeter is clearly Wes Welker. And so we're going to give him a shout out there. But yeah, so, you know, but I still feel like that area will be redeemed by the end with the beak. And I agree. He's really standing up for a lot of things.
This is not a long movie by football standards, because the running time in this also includes the credits. So you think about it, there's about 15 minutes of credits at the end of this. So like this movie will be resolved fairly quickly here. So I'm guessing that there's some sort of resolution for Jules. Like Any Given Sunday was like 3 hours long, right? There was just a lot.
Man, I would have really felt trapped with that one.
Yeah, you would have definitely felt trapped on that one. But like, so I think a lot's got to happen here in the next 15 or 20 minutes. I mean, lives are going to change, I would say.
Things change, Connor.
I can't get past how many problems Coach Moxon, or no, Moxon's a quarterback. Coach
Vilmer.
Kilmer?
Kilmer.
Coach Kilmer.
I'm thinking of Val Kilmer, and I just mashed those together.
He's causing all the problems. Like, everything is his fault in this movie.
He's the root of evil, Connor.
He can't get out of his own way.
I mean, really, we just saw them kneel a minute and a half off the clock, which is just absurd in many respects.
So, yeah. So, we're going to give I'm going to give my prediction here for the end of this game, because we're at the turning point, obviously. Moxon is running Kilmer's offense to a degree. He's still showing a willingness to change things up by handing the ball off to Brown, who has been a star throughout this entire movie.
Really, we should have given a little bit more shine to him.
Yeah.
Fantastic tailback.
Yeah.
Doesn't get the ball inside the 20. Moxon steps up in a big moment again, does a solid for his teammate, changes the play call so that Brown can go in the end zone.
He's averaging 130 yards a game.
Averaging. But he only had, what, three touchdowns?
But three
because
touchdowns.
Because of Kilmer.
Yeah. God. And then this guy says, okay, we're just gonna kneel the remaining 2 minutes off the clock with a great Welker type wide receiver. Like, you have all the ball control elements to do like a responsible passing game here.
And the stadium boos.
And the stadium, deservedly so.
Deservedly so, yeah.
So my prediction here at the end, I mean, there's gotta be something that the beak can do to not only win the game for the Coyotes, but to expose Kilmer and to make Jules respect him again. Because Jules is looking at him in the audience right now and saying he's running Bud's offense, and I don't respect this man.
This is one of those moments. She wants to see who he really is.
Yes.
The audience does too. I mean, we've gotten a good idea of who the beak is in this movie, but this is the seminal moment, Connor.
We've asked an awful lot of the beak to this point, you know, honestly, and I really think that he should be done. I mean, he's done yeoman's work throughout this film, you know, but again, here he is. My prediction is somehow they change the play. He changes like a critical play to something that he wants to run, quite possibly a hook. We saw the hook and ladder that was set up earlier in the movie during.
Really
practice.
Been paying attention, Connor.
Yeah, they also ran this weird sort of like side formation thing where they had like four players out to one side so that they got single coverage on the left side.
Overloading to one side seems like a popular concept in today's NFL.
Very Malarkian, you know, which is, you know, the beak again, just studying up on things well beyond
just
time.
Years in advance. Yeah.
So my prediction is he somehow finds a way to incorporate this into the game, to then to win the game his way, to help all of his friends, and to still get into Brown, make Jules love him. And I think that we'll also find out that Jules also gets into like a high-end school in the Northeast where they can be together.
Connor, prediction on this note. Do you think that Moxon ends up as the greatest character in American cinema?
Wow. I mean, he's lining up for it. I mean,
excellent. It all depends on the finish, but you think he's a candidate.
Neck and neck with Atticus Finch right now. You know what I mean? Fantastic. It's really coming down to the wire. So we'll see what he does here with the offense. But how am I, like, just, you've seen this movie, like, how laughably off am I right now?
No, I like where you're headed, Connor. I think your head's in the right place.
All right, let's see what happens here.
Oh, Jules.
While this is on, I'm just recording. I love this. This is great.
This is great. I'm fired up right now, Connor.
This is fantastic.
This is the wide open offense we've been waiting for.
This is better than I expected. You banish Bud Kilmer and you start going five wide and just running the air raid? This is fantastic.
Fantastic.
God, love James Van Der Beek. Look at this. Oh. Oh, they're going to run the hook and ladder. Oh, come on. 7 seconds left for all the glory. I love this. I love the beak. Just throw. Oh, so good. Wow, that's all I could say.
A little emotional over here, Connor.
I'm getting a little misty. I mean, that was the first time I've seen that movie, so it's like, you know, feeling that for the first time.
You enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. I mean, the beak was just, from start to finish, was just amazing, you know?
Really just stood out. You know, an alternate ending could have been they didn't win and their lives were still great anyway. You know, football isn't everything.
Yes.
But that might have been a little bit... This was the 90s. I feel like movies were always tied up neatly then.
Think about how much he accomplished in 4 games. He, like, exposed the worst coach in Texas football history, brought in the air raid, somehow installed it. I don't know when he installed it, you know. Saved a relationship from the brink of collapse. I mean, he was making out with Darcy in the middle of the hallway in high school.
In front of Jules.
In front of Jules. Like, that is as declarative a statement as you can make, I think, in high school.
I mean, he stood up with, you know, for his teammates. He stood up for Wendell, you know, getting the touchdown and then not making him get the injection of cortisone that could have stymied his future football career. Yep. Wendell goes on to play at Grambling.
Good for him.
Good for him.
By the way, this coach thought that, like, cortisone fixed a lot of things.
Yeah, let's touch on that point. I just keep saying cortisone shot because I don't know what else to call it. But, yeah, like, you know.
They were like, he tore his ACL. Yeah, like, just give him Tylenol.
Just give him a shot. He'll be fine. We'll just tape his leg back together.
Bud Kilmer, one of the sneaky biggest villains of the 90s.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. And the beak made sure he never coached again.
Amazing.
Amazing.
See, I thought that there was going to be, because they kept showing the statue almost like a Saddam Hussein-esque, like dragging down the statue and people were going to be like cheering.
Yeah, you thought the statue was going to fall. Yeah.
Yeah. I have some lingering questions.
Okay.
How did he, like, because he would have had to expose this at a larger level,
right?
Right. Like, someone would have had to explain why the coach is not coaching anymore. Like, I wonder, you know, the local newspaper was heavily featured at the beginning of this. Maybe they got involved. They started digging around here and digging up some stuff on Coach Kilmer.
You're right. It's Texas high school football, heavily covered. Someone would be asking questions. They even mentioned on the broadcast, you know, that... But Kilmer wasn't there for the second half. So people noticed.
People noticed, yes. Maybe they dug in. My other question was, I cannot rectify the dad, the Beak's dad in this, because at times he feels like the guy who wants his son to stand up to the coach and be this nonconformist rebel star. But then other times he's just like a real, like, shit for brains who, like, doesn't care that his kid got into Brown. And it's just a bad dad in general. You know what I mean?
You're right. He said, I stood up to Kilmer and my son will too. But that was really the only time the entire movie that we saw him sort of supporting his son.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that left a little bit untidy for me.
I think it's one of those stories where you sort of wonder where the leadership qualities came from. And really, I think in the case of the beak, they just were inside of him all along. And he was just waiting for the moment for them to... you know, come out of him.
The only lines the Beak's mom had in this movie were, like, very drunken, slurry. There was, like, 2 or 3 times when it just, they were trying to paint a very clear picture of her being a distant, really non-caring person at all.
Yeah, I mean, like many 90s movies, I think the female characters left a lot to be desired. Yes. I mean, I do think Jules sort of prodded him to this seminal moment in his life where he becomes the hero. She was the one that really laid the foundation for it. But beyond that, you know, Darcy, the Beak's mom, the teacher who... Hey, but hey, listen, she's got a side hustle as a stripper. So,
She has a Corvette.
She's doing what she needs to do to get that Corvette.
Yes.
So no slight on her, but you know, I think we could see a little bit more depth to female characters.
Yes.
Just a little bit. One of the few areas in which this movie, you know, didn't surpass its time.
I think, though, I mean, while it is tropey, right, the male, you know, this sort of like white male hero, you know, and all that kind of stuff, I do think he was one of the better, like, heroes of the 90s. Like, I think he was solid, you know?
He stood up for those who
good
couldn't...
things.
Yeah, who, good things. People who couldn't stand up for themselves.
At a time when I think this movie came out in the 90s, where there would have probably been people in Texas who watched this movie and left mad at James Vanderbeek.
It's a great point. Yeah. It's a great point. He challenged authority. He challenged the norms of Texas high school football culture in a way that probably made a lot of people uncomfortable in small town Texas.
Who do you think, who does he remind you of? Like, if the Beak grows up to be an NFL quarterback, he is who in your mind? Like,
oh, that's a great question.
Because cannon arm, I mean, how many mascots did he knock out in this movie? Two or three mascots.
I mean, that run, the 40-yard run he had for a touchdown reminded me of that Steve Young long touchdown run. So that was sort of the first thing that came to mind from that play on its own.
Right-handed Steve Young.
Yeah.
Steve Young could be very virtuous. Maybe there was some stuff going on at BYU we didn't know about in the 80s, but like an even more virtuous Steve Young type.
Right, I was going to say, you know, it's kind of, you know, that's the on-field comparison. But, you know, I think the Beak is just really...
In a class of his own.
Really in a class of his own.
What did you think second time watching it, first time in what, God, 15 years?
Yeah,
years.
Like, you know, somewhere around there, you know, not, I've already said my age probably earlier in this podcast, so I'm not sure. You know, I think the raunchiness I had forgotten about a little bit, perhaps while watching it as a teen, you know, maybe I glossed over those moments in my mind because it was probably a little bit uncomfortable at that point in time. And I think probably some of the dark things that happened in the movie didn't maybe resonate as much then as they do now when you cover football full time and you see, you know, the lasting impacts of concussions and painkiller abuse and players pushing to come back from injuries, right? I mean, that was very, I mean, they really shined a light on those issues in a way that a lot of football movies do not. But I don't know, maybe some of the other ones, listen, we've discussed this. I have not seen most of the football movies.
I think you're dead on, though.
Am I, Connor? Yes. You're the real film critic in this room.
I think you're dead on. Like when we had Robert Klimko on at the another one of our colleagues at the end of the Any Given Sunday podcast, he wondered like who did they consult with in this movie, because there were all these issues about gender roles in football, power, medical doctors, all this kind of stuff that was, you know, again, that movie came out around the same time, and so you're wondering like was this maybe the first era where people started whispering, like, you know, hey, there are bad people associated with this, you know.
Yeah,
they're bad, you know, not all football coaches are good guys, like, you know, it's the first time that felt like that was really challenged, you know.
Yeah, so, you know, who was the offensive consultant on this movie? Like, were they calling like a young Sean McVay? Did Varsity Blues inspire Sean McVay? These are questions that we can get answered, Connor.
This is now it's on us. So it was the Beak got us to here, and now it is on us to carry it on. The Varsity Blues, not a bad football movie, a great football movie.
Great football movie. I'm really glad I could introduce you to one of the best flicks of all time.
Very, very excited. Well, thank you again to Jenny for coming by and doing this and letting us trap her in the studio for an hour and 44 minutes. Thank you to Wolfer Estates Dry White Cider. Fantastic. Just a great pairing.
It's really, really all around. Yeah.
The Beak and a good cider. I mean, that's it. You know, we're living the dream right here.
Fun afternoon, Connor. Well spent.
Well spent. All right. Well, we'll see everyone next week. And if you have a movie that you'd like to see on Bad Football Movies, reach out to us on Twitter or on the Talkback feature on SI.com. And thanks as always for listening.